The room was tastefully furnished, and at the far end sat another woman, who was preoccupied with something else. After casting a glance at me, she simply ignored me and carried on with what she was doing. The lady on the sofa pointed at my trousers and said that they were an unusual design and that she hadn't come across any like mine before. As I looked down, I noticed I was wearing the beige trousers I had bought in the summer in a men's fashion shop. It was only when I came home that I noticed they had strange cross stitchings above and below the knees and had a low waistline. I am not a fashion-conscious person, and my purchase had been purely accidental. My wife Julia had tactfully pointed out that men like myself at pensionable age would normally avoid purchasing such a garment designed for 16-year-olds. I then remembered from an earlier experience that on the next level people are not always familiar with design and fashions on Earth, just as I am not either. The most vivid example was during an earlier experience where I was observing cars. Some of them were distinctly old-fashioned, but aiming to be modern and yet missing current car designs by miles. The most ridiculous car was one that aspired to be a modern Mercedes. Sadly, the only thing it had in common with this aspirational brand was the three-pointed star. The owner of the car seemed to be totally oblivious that a company like Mercedes would never dream of designing a clunky object like that. I also noticed there was no link at all to current earthly design trends, and I had the feeling that the people in this town had simply lost contact with the real world altogether and had evolved their own culture by muddling along on their old and often outmoded memories. This was an amazing thing which I observed over and over again, the distinct idiosyncrasies in astral cultures of closed-off communities. We find this on Earth as well, of course, such as the Amish community or some native tribes still hidden in remote forests. On the non-physical realities this was just much more pronounced and common, as there was a quite natural cultural attraction of conforming tastes, so you can find distinct communities on the astral level that form a kind of coherent style. Here in the sitting room I had been invited to, I noticed that the woman who had complimented me on the choice of my stylish trousers had reproduced them simply by an act of intent, and she was now holding a pair in her hands and brushing lightly over the stitching. I asked her whether she was fond of our current fashion on planet Earth, which she confirmed. She then proceeded to manifest a matching jacket to my trousers, which I did not wear, but she told me that this would go well together. I noticed the jacket had subtle lines like inverted cord in the same color as the trousers. I noticed the ease with which she manifested these items, and I asked her how she did that. "It is very easy once you get the hang of it," she told me. "You just have to use your imagination and simply trust it." "Show me," I said. "Have a cup of tea," she offered, and without any effort whatsoever she handed me a cup filled with tea, ready to drink. I took a sip and then put it down. "I want to try," I said. I visualized a teacup, and in my hand a porcelain object formed. It was like a cup, but distorted, and there was a gap in the side which would prevent it holding any liquid. The woman laughed. She told me that I had to put a bit more effort into it. Not knowing how, I used my other hand to try to fix the gap with my fingers, as you would with a freshly thrown clay pot that was split. This cup was already solid and even glazed, displaying a distinct pattern, which I had no idea of where it had come from. I certainly did not imagine it and figured I must have added it subconsciously. Finally, I fixed the gap, but the cup was still distorted, showing the marks I had left with my fumbling fingers. Giving up on the idea of ever being able to produce a perfect result, I focused on filling it with tea. This seemed to be a lot easier. I imagined that this was because I already knew what tea was and simply expected tea to be there, and it was. As I hadn't managed to create a handle, I picked up my grotesque creation and proceeded to drink. To my astonishment, the tea was little more than water, and my face must have shown it. My audience laughed out loud, and one said, "Try it now." My second sip showed me that the liquid in my cup had magically turned into proper tea. We then started a long conversation. I commented about how real everything was and how physical it all felt, and that it must have been very strange for them to get used to their lives here after they had first arrived. There are many things more strange than this here. Although being able to conjure up things out of thin air took some getting used to, the blonde woman said. We talked some more. Did she feel this life was more real than her physical one she had left behind? She told me her past life hardly featured any more and meant little, it was a distant memory at most and more like a dream. This was much more intense and interesting, although also more disturbing if you didn't adapt and keep control of your thoughts and feelings, she added. Her friends elaborated and told me that appearances were less consistent than on Earth. I remembered when Googling school friends I had known as a child and tracing their adult pictures after 40 years, there would have been no way I would have recognized some of them. Here it was much more intense. I found that out when the individual who had introduced me to his female companions suggested I should follow him and have a bath. I was puzzled and wondered whether I looked dirty or, worse still, smelled funny. He laughed and told me that I would enjoy it because it was not like a bath I had ever had before. He led me out of the room, down the stairs into an open courtyard, and there in the middle of it was a bathtub filling with water. Just then a man walked past me with a towel around his waist. He was fat, with prominent blue veins stretching hideously all over his white skin. I was so shocked that I gasped. The man, aware of my reaction, turned round. As he did so, his appearance began to change. His body size and skin color returned to a more normal state and the blue veins disappeared. Instantly I was aware that his body was simply expressing his state of mind and my awareness must have jolted his thoughts, returning him to normal. This was not the first time I had noticed that what goes on inside people very often finds expression on their outside. Seeing this so graphically and blatantly in operation, I wondered why none of the afterlife explorers and mediums had drawn much attention to this fluid state. I had observed it on many other occasions, this dynamic change of our outer appearance in sync to our emotions, thoughts and feelings which, unless we assert discipline or know how to stop this responsiveness, will naturally take place. I returned to the bath and stripped off. The water did not feel wet, but had a strange, invigorating quality. I became excited just swirling the water in the bath with my arms. My mind became very lucid and I marveled at the crispness and vividness of my experience, and the fact that I must have spent the best part of an hour with little pull from my body. That changed abruptly when I heard a noise coming from my bedroom, physical noise of the shower door from the ensuite, which terminated my experience. Previously I had established that there are five basic natural powers which enable us to conjure up objects out of thin air, where intent is probably the most unnatural or complicated one, mainly because the focus is on the mind, which can be disconnected from the driving energy of emotion, as in my case with the cup of tea. It is far easier to expect something without even thinking about it, but even this may not result in the quality of the manifestation we've expected. Quality relies on the clarity and purity of the channel created. A selfish person will find quality manifestation much harder. The power of expectation is the second way of manifestation and a very common one, and closely linked to this is the power of habit, where we open the manifestation channel simply by repeated use of the same process. This is why we find people employing other people to do the manifestation for them, like looking for a tradesman to fix our house or a painter to do a painting for us, though with a bit of practice we can do all this ourselves. The payoff for getting people to do our bidding is the benefit they receive that comes with service, mainly a brightening in their circumstances. Another power is the power of consensus, where a group of people work on a project together, and lastly is the power of desire, where intense desire becomes the driving force behind our manifestation process. However, this involves a mixture of attitudes of wanting and letting go, which initiates and stimulates subconscious energies to complete the process. Now another power to consider are the subconscious energies which manifest without us even knowing or being aware of them. It relies on pent-up or unreleased energies and is mainly responsible for sending us to the environment most suited for us. It is also largely in charge of our attire, our external appearance, and often adds other things in our manifestation process that is pulled from the subconscious, like in my case the pattern on my cup. The fat man with the veins covering his body is a typical example of subconscious energies at work. Changes in appearance is an accepted feature on the astral level, though most people learn how to control it once they have established themselves there. When the attention is focused away from the self, I have witnessed some mind-boggling and astonishing subconscious transformations in the people living there. The following experience is a graphic example of this. The 16th of January 2011, metamorphosis. I got up early in the morning in order to meditate, but instead I spent most of my time thinking about other things. I opened my eyes, focused on my breath for a 10-minute break. Finally, I managed to meditate as usual for about another hour. I then became aware of a strong hypnagogic image of a road with dark gray gravel. When my consciousness turned dreamy, I entered into the scene. The first thing to do was to establish full waking awareness. This was extraordinarily clear. I picked up some gravel from the ground and watched it closely as it ran through my fingers, making a musical tinkling sound. I repeated this 3 times as my waking awareness became more acute and I was confident that I had full waking consciousness. The first thing I did after this was to take to the air to check out the environment. I sailed high up on wings of euphoria, leaving hills and mountains streaming past underneath me. The landscape below me was simply breathtaking. I noticed to my left a hillside community with cute dwellings nestling against the mounds. Moving closer, I saw that they were artists' open-air studios. The first artist I saw, as I hovered about 10 feet above her, was a woman producing a pencil drawing of a life model. To my surprise, I noticed that the artist herself was covered in pencil marks, almost as if somebody had drawn her. A little further along, I spotted a large building also built into the hillside, with a number of studios jutting out like balconies into the open. I landed in a courtyard and proceeded to visit a large studio. To my utter astonishment, I found that the artists looked rather surreal. One in particular stood out, as if he was a cubist representation of his painting. Nearly all the artists in the studios somewhat resembled their own paintings. One man's representation shocked me initially until I looked at the grotesqueness of his drawing, in which he had represented himself with snakes in place of his limbs, his drawing on the paper closely resembling his actual disfigured body. Had I not been in full waking consciousness during this whole episode, I could have easily believed that this was just a very weird and surreal dream, but it was not. I then realized that the intense concentration of these artists had them identified so much with their work that they had transformed themselves into a 3D version of their drawings. When I spoke to one of them, with her concentration broken, she morphed slowly back into herself with a smile. This episode made me aware of how intensely psychological this world actually is. Looking back, in the past I did not always enter such strange events into my journal simply because I had felt that I could have fallen victim to an elaborate dream and that I had not been observing an objective consensus reality at all. After many more experiences, I am now more certain and convinced that my observations are authentic and true. Even if I have come across few experiences having reported these phenomena, there is much we don't yet know, don't want to know or can't accept about our afterlife state, because it is simply too strange and doesn't fit into our preconceived ideas of what reality should be like. Or we simply like to believe that after all our struggles here in this world, death should finally give us our much-needed break and eternal peace. Many people showing interest in the afterlife are only too willing to give undue credence to established hearsay, in an endeavor to build a safe belief that all will be well after death. Reality is reality wherever we are, and fantasies and wishful thinking does not make it go away. We are better served by surrendering to facts. Many fantasies have been painted about fairies and nymphs frolicking around us in summerland glades when we die. Yet to most who are psychologically sound, the next stage of their journey will show a cornucopia of benefits, but it is unlikely that they will be in a format that can easily be imagined. To many, as in the report about my brother-in-law, it will come as something of a shock when finding that reality is surprisingly real and hard, and that in this sense nothing much has changed at all. It is only upon realizing our true state and how our thoughts, feelings, intent and creativity influence and interact with this world, that we unearth the full potential that will take us into regions of consciousness which even our wildest fantasies are unlikely to grasp. In the meantime, it is important to accept and contend with the powerful psychological interaction with our unconscious taking place, its influence on our environments and its far-reaching effect on our experience and life as a whole. Our psychology becomes much more apparent and forms the very fabric of non-physical reality states. Up until now we haven't even scratched the surface. Here is another report of our ability to change our appearance dramatically. The 13th of July 2011, the astonishing power of shape-shifting. I woke up at 4 o'clock a.m., started my meditation 20 minutes later. I was still tired and could not maintain my focus on awareness. Then I must have nodded off, but as soon as I entered a dream I was instantly lucid as I was walking down a tarmac road. I crouched down to look at the detail to make sure I was fully aware and awake. The environment was earth-like and pleasant. I decided to take to the air to get a good look at the city to see if I could identify it as any locational counterpart of places I knew. As I couldn't, I decided to rise to a higher level by chanting the Om. Although it raised my feeling, the city remained the same. Occasionally things happen where I feel they are simply too ridiculous, too fantastic or too unbelievable to be documented because they would simply undermine everything else and discredit me as a reporter. In the end I decided to put my reservations to one side and leave it to the reader to decide whether to give credence to the following happening or simply dismiss it. Something very strange and quite extraordinary happened. Right ahead of me in the distance I saw a dragon flying directly towards me, making a few turns on the way. One or two elaborate somersault maneuvers, and then sailing closer, occasionally flapping its majestic wings. My first thought was that I was dealing with an unintended, subconscious projection, but focusing on awareness did not make it disappear. Instead, I was taken by its rather human characteristics. The strange, idiosyncratic maneuvers and behavior made it look rather benevolent, almost humorous. I felt touched and kept following its antics. I was feeling a strange fascination and hesitantly flew towards it to investigate. The dragon stopped before me in midair and, to my surprise, greeted me by brushing its nose against me. The animal, if you could call it an animal at all, wasn't very big, perhaps twice my size and hence not very threatening at all. It was more like a dragon invented for a friendly children's movie. With brightly colored skin, it was modern and was almost hip and trendy looking, like a girl dragon. That was just an impression, I couldn't pin it on any external markers. At that moment, any idea that I was dealing with an animal went straight out of the window. Without saying anything, and by nurturing the curious sensation that I was participating in an amusing prank, we both took to the air simultaneously and after doing a few acrobatic rounds we landed in an open field. As soon as we touched ground the dragon morphed into a young woman, a strangely familiar one, an old friend I had known for ages but had lost contact with. The woman looked to be in her early 20s and was very attractive. The red color of her hair and her contemporary outfit matched the colors of the dragon she had been only moments before. "I know you," I said, "but sadly I can't place you." The girl did not answer and instead gave me a mysterious smile. "Did you enjoy my dragon act?" "I certainly did." "How did you do this?" "I have witnessed many times before that people in this non-physical reality have no problems changing into almost anything they fancy. I have seen it in carnival processions and theatrical shows and with my mother too, though she always remained human, young and female, but never had it occurred to me to try it out for myself. It's easy, the girl replied. To become a dragon you have to become a dragon from the inside out. I took it that this meant using your imagination and your passion. She did not care to elaborate and instead we both decided to take a walk through the town. The rest of the experience lasted for another hour and involved us visiting shops, talking to the owners, examining goods and gathering information. I enjoyed doing this in the company of a mysterious and enigmatic friend who remained so until I ended my meditation at about 6 o'clock a.m. I felt slightly annoyed with myself for not having made more out of the experience, such as using it for meditation, but people can hold an enchanting spell over you, especially if they keep their identity and their relationship to you an enigma. I settled down for my normal meditation in my chair. I now had the freshness and wakefulness to make it a rewarding experience of stillness. The 4th of August 2013, do we live a double life? I rarely pursue OBs for their own sake and have come to rely on consciousness to put me in touch with certain learning processes, the people I need to meet or the circumstances during my free nighttime dream state. When I do want to have an OB for a particular reason I usually rely on intent. There are many discussions about the possibility of the multiverse, and having watched a video by a famous scientist who had been evaluating data of the Planck satellite, which in her opinion pointed towards possible evidence of a multiverse, I was curious as to whether I would be able to project into one of these parallel physical universes of hers. This led to a series of rather complicated processes in consciousness. What it showed up was that projection in consciousness is not always a straightforward process, especially when dealing with confusing multiple layers, each one of which is a reality separate from the other. I went to sleep with the intent of projecting into a parallel universe and broadly leaving it to consciousness to work out the detail, but instead of projecting as intended, I had a lucid dream, in which I felt certain that I was physically awake. It was early morning in my lucid dream. I remembered my intent of the previous evening and, in my lucid dream, thinking I was actually physically awake, I decided to go back to bed, unaware that I was actually lucid dreaming, with my intent to project into an alternate universe. Sure enough, as I went back to bed in my dream I promptly had an OB after falling asleep. As I normally do, I first decided to enhance waking awareness by focusing attention on the ground. This had the desired effect. Once fully awake, I decided to check out the parallel universe I imagined myself to be in. I was in a small town. It was the height of summer and pleasantly warm. The town was exceptionally attractive. Instead of pavements there were flower beds with a profusion of flowers and plants, lots I recognized, some I didn't. There was no traffic and people walked in the roads. It was hard not to be distracted by the quaint buildings and all the beauty around me, but I was adamant to stick to my plan. I tried to figure out a way of determining where I was, whether this was a physical reality in a parallel universe or whether I was simply on some higher dimensional level. There was also still the possibility that it could all just have been a lucid dream that was deceiving me into believing that I was having an OB. When focusing on detail to determine whether the lucid dream would dissolve, I found that the scenery I was in fact solid, made of consensual world material. This provided certainty that I was in an OB. I then felt a gentle nudge, which woke me up, or so I thought. It was Julia offering me a cup of tea and letting me know that it was time to get up. I was cross that she had interrupted my OB and then I remembered that she would normally not do that because she respected the fact that I had most of my experiences in the early hours and she would simply leave the tea on the bedside table. I then tried to determine whether this was a false awakening and I noticed that I was in my house, but then remembered that at that time we were actually on holiday in North Devon in a house directly overlooking the sea. This told me that I was in a false awakening. I then decided to close my eyes and see if I could go back to the town with the flower pavements where I had been earlier. Instead, I found myself sitting at a table with two other guys discussing lucid dreams and false awakenings and how to recognize them. I informed them of my original intention, that it would mean a lot to me to establish the existence of parallel physical universes. One of them handed me a marijuana joint with a cheeky smirk, telling me that this would help me make better decisions. I had not been prepared for this and felt momentarily unsettled, but then told him that this was absurd, because this was an OB and also that I didn't smoke. The expression on his face and his thoughts communicated to me that the subject of our discussion was the sort of thing people only discuss when stoned. He suggested I should follow him. Expecting him to be some kind of guide holding the key to the answer of my question regarding parallel universes, I was led into a classroom. There were about 10 or 12 students and a teacher. To my great surprise, they were all huddled over printouts of my own non-commercial illustrations. I immediately recognized them as having been made by myself, though some of them I hadn't even executed yet. I asked my suspected guide what this had to do with anything, but he just looked at me with a broad grin. I decided I was in the wrong place and that my quest regarding parallel universes was being treated as a joke. Unfortunately, and to my annoyance, I then woke up for real, in my bed in North Devon, not having solved anything except being left with more questions regarding what reality actually consists of, and the awareness that people you meet on the other side may not always take things seriously or be willing or able to help you. I wondered how difficult it often is to tear all the different levels apart and whether we will ever be able to say with certainty what reality consists of. Creativity in non-physical reality. Being a professional artist, the phenomenon of creativity on the non-physical realities has always held a powerful fascination for me. Those who read my previous book, Multi-Dimensional Man, will have read the accounts where I visited art schools and observed artists, as well as ordinary people, bringing their creativity to bear by creating objects of unearthly beauty and in radically different forms or even on monumental scales by creating massive environments and whole cities. It's hard to know where to begin when discussing creativity on non-physical reality as, by default, everything is created via the manifestation of creative energy. Instead, the discussion will focus on qualities of creativity and the mechanics of their manifestation. As in our current life here, in non-physical reality, creativity is governed by the quality of its supporting energy. On the lower, more negative levels, the absence of positive energy can be seen by the drabness of the environments and the inability of the occupants to manifest things using their power of intent, simply because the positive aspect of energy is largely absent. If they desire an object to materialize, it will require great effort, willpower, and focus, and the results will be characterized by the quality of their heart, mind, and energy. For example, if they desire to manifest a glass of wine, it may taste flat or sour or have no taste at all. Their clothes may be of poor quality, or even torn or dirty if their state of mind has drawn them into the lower, darker regions. Even rising off the ground and into the air is virtually impossible because this requires loftiness of thought and feeling. Love is the prevailing power in the creation process on the positive and higher states of being. If we stoop down to the very lowest and depraved levels, the absence of love and its positive creative energy becomes abundantly noticeable. Though we must not think that creativity does not exist, it is a creativity based on the powerful expression of emotions such as anger, resentment, hatred, and the whole spectrum of feelings that generate their own energy powered by ill feelings. These energies mold the thought forms and environments reflecting the negative mindsets. Quite often they can be things found in horror movies, bleak and deserted places, empty, dark and haunted looking housing blocks, thought forms fashioned into persistent artificial entities that appear to have a life of their own and are nothing short of horror film monsters. These can be like persistent companions to some who have nurtured and maintained their negative obsessions to such a state that they have taken on a persona of their own. to their constant annoyance, these monsters now feed on their creators and leave no stone unturned to pester and torment them. In a pathological context, these could be seen as the obsessions and the inner voices some mentally ill people experience. We find many parallels to mental illness, psychosis and psychopathic behavior on our physical level. On the non-physical levels, these are represented in a much more graphic and realistic form.